Hey, 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 this is Principal Co-host Sam. As some of you may have already heard, this season is the last season of Inner Hole Uprising. But turn that frown upside down and buckle up, because from now until the end of November, you're in store for the last dance, the final hoorah, our swan song, the last act, our farewell appearance, our famous last words, the culmination. And it's gonna be good, and we want you to be a part of it. So if you have special memories or moments of IHU that you'd like to share with us, drop us a line. It'll make us feel all warm and fuzzy inside, and we'll play them on our final episode. To share your thoughts, leave a voicemail to 404-491-9158. Again, that's 404-491-9158. That number will be in the show notes. Thanks for rocking with us for 10 seasons. All right, let's start the show. Welcome to the Inner Hoe Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamish, non-binary-ish feminist hoe who lives in New York City and whose pronouns are they, them, she, and her. And I got with me...
Akuba, your favorite demisexual mental professional. Pronouns she and her, all the good things, I'm black and stuff.
Love it. You black and beautiful, baby. All right. Every episode of the Inner Hole Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally, we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. Today, we got a very insightful person on the podcast. So we're doing an episode all about the intersection of love, sex, and dating while living life with ADHD. And we have a very dope guest to talk to us all about it. And we're going to introduce them in just a bit. But first, Akua, if they want to follow along with the conversation, how can they do so?
They can follow along with the conversation had on this podcast on social media by using the hashtag Inner Hole Uprising or tweeting us at Inner Hole Uprising without the G on Twitter. We're also at Inner Hole Uprising on Instagram and Facebook.
All right. Short, sweet, and to the point. Let's get into the actual show. Ba-ba-ba-ba. We have a very special guest today, and her name is Renee Brooks. Renee Brooks has taken a late life diagnosis and used it to uplift others. After being diagnosed with ADHD twice as a child, at 25, she was finally able to get the treatment she deserved. She is the founder of Black Girl Lost Keys, a blog that empowers Black women with ADHD and shows them how to live well with the disorder. In addition to her blog, Renee serves the community as a speaker and a coach, and she's also host of Life with Lost Keys podcast.
Hey.
Welcome, Renee.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. So I want to get into the sex, love, and dating, the good stuff, the juicy stuff, but I figured we talk about ADHD generally just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I've read some of your works and things like that, and you've written about struggling with symptoms of ADHD as an adult and growing through this period of life of not knowing like why you were struggling at work and like with finishing tasks at home and things like that. And then only for you to eventually mention that to your therapist that not only were you going through that, but you had been diagnosed as a child and your mom was kind of like, talk to us a little bit about that.
So what happened was in both cases, when I started school, I was in private school and they tested me without my mom's permission. And then they did it again a few years later in public school. So I used to think like maybe that overstep was like some sort of snafu with the private school thing, but it wasn't. So it turns out that I did have ADHD. It really started to affect my work life around 25. Like executive function is the name of what ADHD impacts in you. So like the things that we think of as particularly adulty things, being able to prioritize tasks, be on time, show up, you know, the things that you think of when you think of like that person's reliable, they're dependable. Those things are challenging for people with executive function disorders to perform. And it can cause a lot of chaos in a person's life, whether you're showing up late and getting reprimanded at work, whether your impulsivity has resulted in conflict in your personal relationships. For me as a child, it made for a lot of challenges with turning in homework and meeting deadlines. So then you got some issues as a student. And it all really, I think, I'm glad that you chose the topic of love and relationships, because I think it's a particularly challenging area for us for a variety of reasons. And I think it's a very painful topic, and it's one that people, it's not that people don't like talking about it. I think it's hard to get through identifying the problem, but then actually getting to the point where you can hit some solutions and some actionable steps for people to take, because what causes ADHD to work in one way for one person might not be the way it is for another one. There's a lot of symptoms, and everyone doesn't experience the same symptoms in the same way. Then you bring in personal experiences, and it's very difficult to nail down what can be most effective for a person, because the way you take in information and the way you put information out really dictates your experience in the world. So it can be very complicated to interact with people if they don't understand the way that ADHD affects your life.
Yeah, yeah. Let's dive into some specifics. And just as background, for folks who don't know, I don't think anybody knows on this podcast, and then you, Renee, because you just met me. But so I am in a relationship with someone who does have ADHD, and we're kind of like figuring out what that looks like, because I do not have ADHD, and kind of just like I struggle with like, well, listen to what I'm saying and be on time kind of things. Otherwise, you're saying that you don't care about me. He's like, no, this is like my disorder. So like we're figuring that out and parsing that through. So I'm really excited to talk to you about all this.
Well, and that's such a great example. Yeah. Like that right there. What does society tell us about people who are late to meet with us? That they don't care about us, right? That they're, and not even that they don't care about us, that they're openly disrespecting us. And if you're being openly disrespected by someone who you feel like is a partner, that now that's a red flag that needs to be corrected. And I want to say, like, if being on time is something that causes you anxiety and stress, communicating about the ways that that looks with your partner and what you can do to kind of mitigate, like, how do we give you grace for your time, but also give me grace for the reactions that it can produce in me when you're late, I think we can kind of get to a place where we can reach a mutual compromise and an understanding, but we usually can't get to that point because societally, according to the rules of the way we're told that we engage with each other, the ADHD person is automatically labeled the wrong one, the bad one, because they're late. They're not being wrong or bad or inconsiderate or disrespectful. It literally challenges our ability to perceive the passage of time, and calendars and timers and those things can assist, but they can only assist so much. Mm-hmm. And so because of the societal stigma against lateness, most people are not open to having that discussion with you. So you usually can't get through, and then you're just left with, you're being disrespectful. How do we correct your disrespectfulness? Which is not a place that you want to be in with a partner. No one in a partnership should be correcting anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, right, certainly right. Set your boundaries and advocate for your needs. But like, correcting is something that children do with parents.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's start from, I guess, like entering into relationships, right? So what does entering the dating scene as someone, like the dating scene today, as someone with ADHD look like? Like, we have things like dating apps and stuff like that. And then we have like timeliness with responding to messages. Like, mm-hmm. Are you someone who's experienced dating apps? And what has that been like for you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, just like everything else that we talked earlier about there being a spectrum. So like, you've heard of the term hyperfocus by now in your quest to understand ADHD. So how focused am I on finding a partner? Because I could be hyper-focused at the time and spend hours on a dating website, swiping, narrowing down what attributes I want to go for, comparing those to my previous romantic experiences, trying to eliminate qualities and control for things. So it can become super hyper-detailed. Or I could be the person that goes in and swipes 3-4 times every 6 months and comes back to 15-20 messages and lost opportunities to date. But also, I want to be frank, I think that's a lot of people's attitudes towards dating, right? Especially mm-hmm. right now. Like, these apps, steal a page out of old boy's book, I don't think they're sending their best on these apps. Like, then you get through that whole experience and you meet someone, and then you get into the conundrum of to disclose or not to disclose. If so, if yes, when? Do I want to gauge their reaction immediately on the first date by revealing this very personal piece of information about myself, but one that needs to be discussed early enough so people know this is this thing that I need you to understand in order to understand me? And if that seems like something you can't do, the time to step is now.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like? You know, how has that affected your dating life when you're like very much like the time to step is now? Like, how's it been?
I think sometimes people are not honest enough about what kind of, like, you can tell them that you have ADHD and that means whatever they think it means if you haven't taken the time to define it for them as someone who has ADHD or say what your experience is like. So, like, depending on who it is, they could be just like, oh, you have ADHD, I got a relative with that. But they don't really have an understanding of it. And they're saying, well, I've got a cousin who has it and he doesn't do such and such and this and that. Or you could have someone that says, hey, my cousin has ADHD and this works for them and you're doing it and it doesn't work for you. So it's that you're not doing it right. You're not working hard enough to try to correct this thing that I told you you're doing that bothers me. Mm-hmm. Or you have people who think you should follow along with their every word just because, well, you said you have this challenge. So that must mean that I'm right in this scenario because I'm better at being on time than you are, or I'm better at controlling my impulses as you are. So now I've set myself up. Now I'm the default. Now I'm the one who describes how all of our interactions can go. Like, it can get very intense. But on the other side, it can also be someone who goes, maybe they have ADHD too. Maybe they've got a sibling or a relative or a friend who has it and they have an understanding of it. And they're able to very swiftly understand where you're coming from. Because so much of this isn't about people say, well, tell me what you need. I need understanding. First and foremost, mm-hmm. like, you can't help me before you've understood what the problem is. And mm-hmm. it's not an easy problem to understand. People think they understand what ADHD is. Most of them do not. They think it's people jumping up and down and not being able to sit still. And that's where it begins and ends, right? Like, we all got like the little like child's play kid in our head mm-hmm. and they're jumping up and down. It's a little mm-hmm. white boy that's like the ADHD avatar. That's who everybody thinks of immediately. Mm-hmm. And so imagine me, a fat black woman with dreadlocks down to my ass, sitting at a table telling you, oh no, I have ADHD. So first you have to get past the fact that I don't look or seem anything like what you thought ADHD looked like. And then you're mm-hmm. like, well, you seem perfectly reasonable to me. You're not jumping up and down. You're not doing anything disruptive in this restaurant. Mm-hmm. Are you sure you have this? So mm-hmm. suspicion can often be. And then you're like, now I feel like I'm in a position where I have to like go into the intricacies of my life with a person maybe before I'm ready to. Mm-hmm. And so you're constantly having to decide, like, and then sometimes you can over evaluate how close you feel to somebody. Maybe I feel like it's time to reveal and they're like, hey, I barely know you. What's going mm-hmm. on here?
Yeah.
So it's a hard balance to strike.
And talking about, you know, getting to know someone, choosing whether to disclose. First I can phrase this as, are you a person with ADHD that experiences rejection sensitive dysphoria?
I am.
Well, maybe I should give a background on what rejection sensitive dysphoria is. Do you want to go for it, Renee?
So rejection sensitive dysphoria is like, it's almost like an umbrella term that we use to describe the symptoms that a person can experience. And I think this is really important with rejection sensitive dysphoria. Rejection is determined by the person who's experiencing it. So it could be actual outright rejection, or it could be perceived rejection. And that's that perceived rejection area gets really tricky for relationships. But in any event, like, people can feel disproportionate amounts of sadness, shame, distress when they feel rejected. And that can come out in the form of, I mean, anyone who is severely however you react when you're severely disappointed or hurt or feel betrayed is how a person's going to react in those scenarios. And it can be really problematic because, again, it's perception. Perception can be as bad as, hey, shut the front door. Hey, I don't like the way you said that to me.
And I want to clarify that this is not your regular degla nigga that wilds out when you reject
no,
him on the street.
No, not at
this
all.
I have to make that clarification. It's not when he asks for your number and now he's calling you a hoe and a bee and a... And whatnot. No, that is not what it is.
No, I'm talking about like the established relationship, and we all know it, where that tone of voice can hit you wrong and you're like, oh, so what you said was innocent. You said to shut the door, but you said it with an attitude and I heard you. Are you trying to say something about me?
Or even being in a relationship with, you know, because your partner can have their own boundaries, not wanting to be touched at a certain moment, not wanting to watch a show with you. And now it's like.
And is it that you just didn't want to be touched, or is it that you don't want me to touch you? And depending on where we're at, I am more likely to lean towards you don't want me to touch you. And now what I do with that feeling from there on depends on like what's going on in my life. Am I hungry? Am I angry? Am I lonely? Am I tired? Like, in people with ADHD, that impulsivity piece is there and that rejection sensitivity is there. So you're more likely to feel rejected, but your threshold for response can be lower because you've got impulsivity. And maybe a little bit of anxiety. A lot of us have that comorbid of anxiety or depression, which can also cause you, you know, what kind of mental health space are you in right now? Are you in a depressive episode? Are you under a lot of pressure at work that's lent to your anxiety? So those can reduce your bandwidth too and make it more likely for you to maybe lash out verbally. Maybe you withdraw emotionally.
I want to add, because we've started this conversation kind of speaking about ADHD as this really overarching term. And there are, you know, ADHD is a spectrum, and there are at least three distinctive types. So you have ADHD, inattentive type, ADHD, hyperactive type, and then ADHD with a combined presentation of both inattentive and hyperactivity.
Absolutely.
And people fall anywhere in there. So I just want to kind of clarify that. So yeah, you can be a person with impulsive tendencies or a combined presentation of both.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All of those things affect people differently. So it's just kind of like the RSD can be difficult for both partners, because if you don't have any intent, if you weren't trying to, or maybe you were, maybe you did have an attitude, that's okay too. People are allowed to have an attitude sometimes. It doesn't always mean that it's rejection. It doesn't always mean that it's being thrown at us. And like, that's one example of many. It could just be like, I don't know. Like, it's difficult to give specific examples because they're so commonplace and everyday.
Let me know if this one hits, because it's a funny voiceover that I see in reels on Instagram. But it's typically a woman on the phone calling her partner, and they're like, are you mad at me? Because the way you put on your shoes this morning said that you
yes,
were upset.
It's the same thing. Yes. Like, did you shut the front door? Like, you didn't, the way you, I said to, my friend earlier today, like, my friend texted me and all she said was one word, and something bad happened to her, because she surely doesn't do it like that unless something important has to be said. And then it wound up being something positive. And I was like, I mean, sometimes it just be off, though.
So how does RSD affect or come into play when you choose to disclose to potential partners about your ADHD?
I think I just give them the basic overview and just kind of tell them, like, if this thing happens, and really it's more of a when than a if, here are the things that I think I need. Here are the things that I think you need to know. And please tell me what I can do even when I'm having a challenge with RSD. Like, if you can see that it feels disproportionate to you, maybe say something like this. And I know maybe it's time for me to try to table this discussion while I pull myself to the side and give myself some time to settle emotionally. Maybe you say, like, hey, if you're upset, that's fine, but I need you to not raise your voice. I need you to not completely shut down and not talk to me. Or if you have to shut down and not talk to me at all, maybe we can get some kind of signal or something that you can give me to let me know, like, hey, I'm struggling to maybe not react. Mm-hmm. And I can't verbalize that for you right now, but like, hey, you've got to give me a minute because I'm maxed out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I feel for partners who are trying to learn to navigate that, because I think because they can see that their partner is in such genuine distress, they forget that they have needs within that dynamic too. And it becomes, how can I comfort that person? How can I make them feel safe? But it's not okay for a partner to not get what they need or be made to feel unsafe and sacrifice their need to be comforted and feel secure because to somebody else's symptoms. So again, that's like, communication is key in any relationship. I think it's even more critical in this type of relationship. And it requires patience to be able to create the type of trust that's going to leave you with a person who feels like they're safe enough with you to be transparent about these things. Because a lot of us who are working through these things, especially Black people, like, you know, we're the way that Black people react to disrespect, I think, is like, there's a when you take so much disrespect in the outer world, you're much less reluctant to tolerate it in your inner world, I think. And that's, of course, a generalization. We're not a monolith, but I think a lot of us identify that way. Like, I'm not going to let you disrespect me.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad that you said that, because that's something that comes up in my relationship for a lot of different reasons. So it's like, I experience the world as a Black queer woman. So it's like, ain't nobody motherfucking disrespect me at any time.
When I shut this door, this is my house, and anything that go on here needs to be respectful and loving towards me, because I got to be able to survive to go out there again.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So then being in a relationship with a man who is like mixed race, it's like, you're not going to disrespect. But then also like holding that space, it's like, oh, that wasn't disrespect.
Am I reading this as disrespect? And I'm not. Right. Nuance into consideration.
Yes. And we all have to be able to, in order to have a relationship that's edifying, I think we have to know how to approach that with some love and some patience. And we've all got wounds we need to be cognizant of, especially as Black people, as queer people, dating. Like, there's a lot of stuff that we bring with us. And I don't think that's a negative thing. I think it's just something we have to be gentle and mindful of. And that can be difficult when we feel like we're being disrespected or infringed upon, or even just not treated gently. I think it's important for us to treat mm-hmm. our partners, you know, that's the heart. Yeah. Hearts are fragile. They break. Be gentle with it. Like, mm-hmm. so I need you to know, when I shut down completely and I'm not talking to you, it's because I'm trying to make sure that I've controlled myself so I don't say or do mm-hmm. something that I regret, because I respect you. So I need you to know, when I throw the flag up, like, you gotta let me have the flag. Like, this is important. This isn't. But then I also have to honor that by not throwing the flag unless it's absolutely necessary, and not use it to avoid the problem. So, like, we got to have mutual respect.
Right. I appreciate you saying all that. Like, it's a very nuanced situation, and we all kind of have to come with, like, hearts forward kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
And everybody needs something different. Like, what works? Like, I think we hear the condition name and we see the symptoms and we think, okay, what do, just like we approach, just like white people approach Black people and say, what do Black people want? People can approach us, and I'm glad Akua came in and clarified, like, there are different presentations, there are different symptoms, everything's different. Thank you for that, because there is no one size fits all to this. Like, right. I can't tell you what all ADHD people need. I can tell you, here are some things that can go along with these symptoms. Here's what it can look like. But everything that you're hearing on this podcast doesn't matter if none of that is how your partner is affected. So, like, don't be listening to us and thinking, oh, I know what my partner needs now. And then be like, well, I listened to the podcast with the lady talking about the ADHD, and I'm giving you what she said you needed. Like, I didn't tell you. I can't tell you what they need because I'm not them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, listen to this podcast, but also listen to your partner.
Use it as a starting point. Yes. Like, hey, this is what this lady experienced. Do you experience this too? Mm-hmm. Or do you have some other experience? Like, use it as a springboard. You might hear this and think, this girl crazy. What you mean you need to throw up a flag? I can have the conversation right there. Maybe you can, or maybe you'll hear me and go, ooh, maybe I should throw a flag up in my conversation once in a while. So, like, there's no one way to do it. And I think it always comes back to the same thing, understanding, education, and compassion, because this disorder sounds like something we made up. I can pay attention when it's something that I love and it's really awesome, and I'll delve into it and I can astound you with all of this information about all these amazing things. But I also am not going to remember that you told me to pick up milk at the store at all. It doesn't matter how many times you remind me, my brain just flushes it every time you bring it up. And I don't have any control over when and where that happens or what thing my brain will refuse to retain. And sometimes you're going to wonder if I'm telling you the truth because of the amazing things I can do at other times. And if you're wondering which side I think you should err on, like, obviously use your wisdom and your intuition. But if you have to err on a side, try to err on the side of believing them. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that people can't be out there with bad intentions and be manipulative, but, like, you can see the patterns if you're watching, and you can see when a person is making an effort truly and when they're not. And if they're telling you that they're not able to do something, maybe it's that they haven't figured out how yet, or maybe they're just bad at it and they'll always be bad at that particular thing, but there's something else that they can offer you that still covers that need that you have, because your need is still important. It might just be that we have to go about a different way to execute it. Like, you feel safe when I'm on time. It makes you feel unsafe when I'm not there on time. I want to honor that. Can you give me a 15-minute grace period? I promise that I'll communicate with you and not avoid you if you can offer me the grace that I need. Then we've got a fair exchange going on. It needs to be fair exchange.
For sure. I feel like I'm the color guy on this episode, which is, like, personal experience. Yeah. And Akua was like, I know all the facts. But something that's been helping me with just, like, work in general, like, I suffer from PTSD. And one of the manifestations of that is, like, thinking of everything negatively. So, like, once you slight me, it's like a slight to how you feel about me. So one thing that's been helping me is, like, divorcing the action from my worth as a person, which I think is just, like, good walking through life in general.
That is RSD. You know, people with PTSD can, like, RSD is not exclusive to ADHD at all. Like, as a person who also has PTSD, it, and you know what, like, okay, this ain't what we came to talk about, but now that you said you got PTSD, like, roll with me. So Nadine Burke Harris wrote this book called The Deepest Well, and she went out to, I want to say it was the Bay Area, started a clinic there, and did a bunch of work with the ACEs questionnaires and found that a lot of the children who had been diagnosed with ADHD actually had PTSD. So you have more insight into like the way that the symptoms present can be very similar. You might have more insight into what your partner is experiencing than you think.
It's a really good point.
That's actually like, I'm glad that you said that. You mentioned ACE, and that stands for adverse childhood events, just for the people listening.
I'm just going to take a cool with me everywhere for the rest of the year. A cool, email me when we done, because yes.
But you're so right in that the symptoms of ADHD can mirror the symptoms of anxiety, can mirror the symptoms of PTSD, and it's really coming to the roots to figure out. But you can also have comorbid diagnosis. You can have ADHD and PTSD because trauma be happening. This is a bit of a tangent, but do you find that your symptoms of PTSD exasperate your ADHD?
Absolutely. And to the point where, like, the way that I discovered that I had PTSD was because of, I found out I had, am I allowed to swear?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Thank God. Okay. Look, I'm like, oh, so I was watching this Nadine Burke Harris talk. It's a TED talk. I found out I had PTSD from a fucking TED talk. I had been in, this was 2018. So I started Black Girl Lost Keys in 2014. I've been a mental health advocate for years, and I have to find out about my own mental health from a TED talk, which, you know, like, it's not the greatest experience.
Yeah.
I tell people, like, I think there's so much, like, the ADHD part of the journey is important, but I think the trajectory of how much work it took to even get me to the point where I got an ADHD diagnosis and then still had to go that much further before we could identify PTSD, because this lady was trying to diagnose me with bipolar type 2.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I have a lot of family members with bipolar type 2 and type 1. So I know what bipolar looks like. If it was me, I know how important it is to treat it. But I'm telling you, that's not me. That's not my experience. That's not what's happening to me. And I'm telling this person, I've grown up with an emotionally and psychologically abusive step-parent, and I've been molested. And like, so I'm going through these experiences that I'm telling this therapist about that are very clearly traumatic experiences. And never once do I hear anything about trauma. I only hear additional diagnoses. And I'm like, yeah, but like, what? I didn't know anything about PTSD, but I knew like these things have to be addressed. That's what I came here to address. Like, I don't need another diagnosis. I don't need more medication. I need you to tell me what to do with this. And that's what I got instead. It took me until seeing a TED talk and getting with a Black therapist because
that'll do it. That'll do it.
Listen, I want to send my former white therapist a bill of service for all the time. She got far more out of them sessions than I ever did. I'm breaking down Black family structure. Then I'm like, okay, so this is like in general, and now this is where mine exists in there. Mm-hmm. And oh, it's time for the end of the session. So, you know, like, you're missing. If I have to stop in the middle of explaining my pain to you to tell you who I am, probably not for the first time. Now I'm providing it. Like, now you're getting to observe a Black woman out in the wild. You're no longer of assistance to me as far as my mental health goes. So I was able to go to trauma therapy, and it wound up being an incredible experience. Like, probably one of the best things that I've ever done for myself. But I think we all need that experience. And it's difficult because our Black therapists are swamped.
they're limited in numbers, and we swamped.
tired. Y'all are tired. Like, I love y'all. I got so many friends who are Black therapists. And whenever I pick up the phone, I just be like, oh, baby, you sound like you ain't slept in years. And it's not like y'all were sleeping before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But now even more so, like, I be thinking about y'all. That's about all I can do, baby. But I be thinking real hard.
Oh, I'm so glad that you shared that. Because my partner had a similar experience. He has a diagnosis of PTSD. A white psychiatrist tried to diagnose him with bipolar. And a lot of his symptoms mirror ADHD. Yes. I always playfully misdiagnose him. I'm like, that's your ADHD. But I can I can see the difference.
That's what it was. Like, I'm taking my ADHD meds. And, you know, like, it's 2018. I was diagnosed with ADHD in 2009. I take the same dosage of the medication that I've always taken. I'm not experiencing the same therapeutic effect from the drugs that I'm used to experiencing. To me, I'm thinking like, all right, I've been observing this over the course of 6 months. It's been 9 years on the drug. Maybe it's wearing off. I don't think it's as effective as it once was. It tracks. And then I see this and I'm like, I've been seeing a therapist off and on since I left an abusive marriage. And that's on top of other things in my life. You know, everybody, like, life's hard. You know, everyone experiences their traumas. But why didn't anybody ever tell me this could be PTSD? Because it's not like a person comes to you and tells you they survive these kinds of things. As a therapist, it doesn't even occur to you to maybe think that it could be trauma. Do you think that I cannot be traumatized as a Black person? Because that's a problem. It's almost like they expect it as it, like, oh, well, you're Black, so of course you
life was hard
experienced all these terrible things. And it's like, look, and I'm not saying this as a point of pride, I'm saying it as a point of identification. Like, no, I haven't experienced a lot of hardship. I grew up in a middle-class suburb that was relatively innocuous. Like, I just experienced a lot of trauma. Like, whatever it is that, like, it's very frustrating to have it continually thrown in our face that people think we cannot feel or experience pain, or if we have, we should just accept it meekly and carry on.
Before this tangent, but a great tangent nonetheless.
Great tangent.
So I loved where we went.
Thank you.
You were talking about considerations that partners can make for their partner with ADHD. What considerations have you made for partners? You know, how do you toe the line between showing up for your partner, but also showing up as your authentic self?
So the fortunate thing for me is that my current partner also had, like, we have very similar diagnoses. And I'm not saying that you have to date someone with the same diagnoses as you. What I'm saying is, like, I think we're at a similar, we have similar things, and we've both put the same type of investment into really understanding our mental health conditions and how they work with us. So we're able to both come from that place and of like, yeah, I see you're upset. My goal is reunification. Can I talk to you? Like, are you approachable right now? Can we talk? If not, can you let me know when you're ready so that we can like sit down? Like, it, like, we're both very good at knowing when to say, hey, I'm here, I'm coming in peace. Is it okay to come? If not, let me know when you're ready, but I'm here. And it's still going to be in peace by the time you get to me. I think that kind of safety is something that I wish for all of us, ADHD or no ADHD, but that took a lot of work on both of us as individuals to be able to hold that kind of space for each other, even when we're struggling emotionally. And I think the work that we did in therapy prior to meeting each other gave us the foundation that we needed to be able to do that. Like, we've learned healthy ways to communicate, and so we communicate healthily. So I would strongly recommend, like, if there's something that you need to work through, like, work on it. Like, I'm not saying you can't get into a relationship until you're healed. Is anyone ever really fully healed? I don't know if that is a thing. Like, I think we all are just at whatever stage of development we're at the time. But, like, certainly if you know that you're experiencing something that causes you to act in ways that can be damaging to yourself or others, I think you owe it to yourself and potential partners to confront that with a therapist if you're able. And then there's that. What about the people who cannot? If you're able, some of us can't. What are you like? What and what do we do with that?
What do we do with that?
Okay.
I don't know.
Does anybody
you know
have
I mean?
The, yeah, like, right. Yeah.
What do we do? Do we try to beef up informal spaces? But that can get dangerous because informal spaces by very nature are not run by professionals.
Yeah.
Sometimes that gets messy. Like, but I would be very reluctant to ask any Black therapist right now to do anything for me or the community that is not bringing them profit directly because they're so beleaguered. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, right. Yeah. It's a really, do we try to create more funding to send more Black people to school? It seems like people mm-hmm. are trying to move towards that so we can get more Black clinicians out here who can see us as human. And then two, like, flip side, like sometimes people, I see more and more that people are delaying mental health treatment until they can get to a Black therapist.
Yep.
And that's dangerous. Like that white therapist tried to diagnose me with bipolar 2 and she was wrong, but she also kept me alive until I could get to the Black therapist. I just think there. I've seen people who are literally like running on fumes but still unwilling to take the step towards therapy until they can get someone that looks like them. And I just feel like that's one of those things where it's difficult because I get it. Like if you're getting the wrong kind of help, that's not helpful either. But if you're not getting any help, then you've resigned yourself to fate to a certain degree. It's a hard, hard challenge that we're facing as a people.
Mm-hmm.
But aren't we facing it? Have you seen how the conversation has progressed?
For sure. And we have like these databases and things like that and how to connect with Black therapists. And yeah.
But we need more Black therapists. Please.
Yeah, it's hard. Yes. It's hard.
Like I'm starting to feel a little bit of pressure because, you know, like if this is going to be my life's work anyway, like I can contribute in a meaningful way without being a therapist. But my therapist siblings are getting worn out. Like those of us who maybe can should probably do. I think from a community perspective, but also I'm tired.
For sure. Which okay. is equally as valid. And mm-hmm. what do you think about that in terms of, I guess, like specifically ADHD, because that's what this episode is about, but just like holding space for each other within relationships, you know, like as a people, we do lack access in terms of like economics and like access to healthcare providers that white people have and people with money have. So like, I mean, I just want to hear your thoughts about this. Like, what about the undiagnosed ADHD folks in relationships with people right now? Like, where does that leave them?
So to me, lands a smack dab into the self-diagnosis debate, because of course, like, I'm mm-hmm. sure you've run into the dialogue, like, should you self-diagnose or should you not self-diagnose? Well, you can't really diagnose yourself because you're not a clinician, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're looking at the symptoms and the coping skills that you learn online are helpful to you, I don't care whether you have ADHD or not. I care that you get the help to get the things that you need. So I think if people are seeing those things, they're not going to be able to gain access to anything harmful without going through a medical professional anyway. So I mm-hmm. think if they're able to put those things into motion, a lot of the things that people do to manage their ADHD are things that could be generally good for anyone with a mental health condition and for mm-hmm. your overall health in general. So if you see things like the thing that the official diagnosis gains you access to is medication if you need it, but medication is only a tool anyway, so you don't have to wait for that. Try some of the mm-hmm. other things. You're going to still need them even if you do use the medication.
Right.
And I like the medication is wonderful, don't get me wrong, but that was another thing. Like there's not a lot of information when you're diagnosed. So it's like, you got ADHD. Here's your meds. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I take the meds and we're all good. Like, I guess, you know, we'll go be all good then. I don't feel like I'm all good though. And that's when I discovered ADHD coaching. And when you're in coaching, you're able to really go through and learn more about the condition, sure, but the main thing I think that you're able to do is work through how ADHD affects you specifically. Like, it really pulls it out of the pages of the DSM and makes you go, oh, when I wake up 30 minutes late and I'm getting into bed 30 minutes late, like, maybe I'm thinking I need to set my alarm earlier, but what I really need is to make sure that I'm getting into bed an hour earlier. Like, it helps you, like, having that neutral party there with you, they can go, maybe it's this, or maybe, like, flip your schedule around. Like, they're doing some of the things with you that the therapist frankly just doesn't have time for. It's not that, like, the therapist absolutely can do the things with you that a coach can do, but their time, they don't have time to sit there and go through a whole schedule with you and come back to it and reassess how that's working for you. Like, they're trying to make sure that your mental health is where it needs to be. They don't always have time to get into the weeds. Whereas you can come into your coach and say, I need to focus on this. And they can break down that. And now you've got an additional person who's tracking that with you. Or if you don't have the money for a coach, a lot of people who are coaches give out a lot of information for free. Lots of us slide our scales. Lots of people run groups. I run one where you're still given information and you're exposed to, like, there, that I completely almost forgot to mention when you said, what do people who don't have the money to go after the treatment community is so important, because I learned more from the community than I ever learned from a book or in a therapist's office, because you're talking to people who are living it out day by day. And it's kind of like, just like anything else, it's a journey. So you ever watch somebody who's pulling away from religion and that process they kind of go through where they start posting, talking about everyone who believes in religion is a fool. and like, you give it a couple of years and they dial back to, hey, just don't bring that bullshit over here.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, you prayed for me. That's great that you decided to put some positive energy towards me, but that's not my belief system. So, like, thank you, but no.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like that. When people are diagnosed with ADHD, they come in and go, nobody's talking about this. I can't believe it. I need to start a podcast. It's a thing.
Yeah.
Everybody comes in, they want to jump right into teaching. They feel like to draw another religious metaphor, it's like watching somebody who just found Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you about this ADHD stuff. You over there diagnosing your relatives and stuff. I got my relatives' nerves so bad, y'all. So bad. I was like, no, you have it, Mom. Listen. She was like, oh, my God. And, you know, funny thing is, right about the time I decided I was never going to nag her about it again, 2018, she finally went and got a diagnosis.
There you go. There you go.
So, like, you know. Everybody's learning from each other. The community part is, if you can't do anything else, you can get a hold of solid information. If you're going to research ADHD on the internet, please make sure you're doing so from a reliable source. Having said reliable source, I know sometimes what's considered reliable can get a little white supremacy. So use your best judgment there, but try to make sure that it's based in science if you can. And there, which is another challenge, a lot of the things that we know about managing ADHD have not made it into the generally accepted kind of backed up thing. Like, the science mm-hmm. isn't there. We don't have any studies, not any really big ones, on how ADHD affects Black people specifically. There's nothing mm-hmm. like that out there. Like, there's some things about the disparities in diagnosis, et cetera, but, like, how that plays along with the things that Black people already experience, there's not really anything out there that can tell you that. So, like, I'm not poo-pooing science. I think science is, it needs to be taken into consideration. All I'm saying is that there's some holes in the knowledge. Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you and your partner both have ADHD. Do you mind talking a bit about how it presents in terms of symptoms? Like you mentioned, like kind of being in coaching and being able to take directly from the DSM and be like, oh, that's how I experience, you know, forgetfulness, or I experienced constantly changing tasks. You know, I started here and then I ended up here and never finished any one of them.
You know what? It's funny. Like, we're both a really great example of how ADHD presents, because I am the internally hyperactive. I'm sitting on a couch typing furiously on my phone because I've come up with some idea. Or maybe I'm just laying there and it looks like I'm not doing anything, but I'm like trying to think this thing out. And she's up and she's pacing. She's outside cutting up boxes. That's just energy. She just has it. And I'm just like, whereas I'm perpetually exhausted. So It's like, it's a range that plays out pretty well in our house. So, you know, we have to be cognizant of that, because me seeing her get up and move around and do all that activity reads to me as she's working really hard. At what point do I need to get up before she becomes irritated at Black women? You know how sometimes we can be when we're working really hard and there's somebody late. There's something about laying on our couch while we work that just doesn't.
With your feet up.
With your feet up. And you know,
labor.
Like, it's my couch too, so I'm lounging. Like, I'm wrapped up in a big ass snuggly blanket and shit. This woman is running around like from the top of the house to the bottom of the house, and I'm like, surely I'm about to die. She's going to take me off this planet today. I don't know.
Do you find that you guys balance each other out? And like you're saying that you have more of an inattentive presentation. You know, if you started the laundry and then just ended up on a different task, she has the energy to take the laundry out and put it in the dryer.
We're both very good at going, you're better at this part, I'm going to let you take the, like, I was in a previous relationship where both of us had ADHD, and it was like, we were both very much like, we were lobbing duties at each other, like football, like, you're good at this one, so this is yours. Don't ask me nothing about it. I don't want to touch it. I don't want to hear about it. Like, that's you. That's you. If something goes wrong, that's you too. Like, just be over there with your thing. Whereas in this relationship, we're very much like, I'm gonna let you take, like, you the project manager. If there's some part I need to do, like, come holla at me. But you've got the better knowledge base for this, or this is in a skill set that you, like, this is something that might be incredibly difficult for me, but is not difficult for you at all. So, like, my partner walks my dog. I hate walking my dog. The dog's, I've been walking the dog for 12 years. I'm just like, I just, you know, like, you know, I'm about to hit 40. Some shit, you just be like, I don't like that. I'm never going to do it again. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be a rich auntie so I can just be like, I'm never doing it again. And I will pay someone else to do it. I'm not there yet, but one day.
Yes.
So there's that. And there's also like, but to get that, you have to be willing to give it. She don't like driving a lot. I live in Pennsylvania. She lives in Georgia. We're at her house right now. We were at my house. I drove. Like, driving fires up her anxiety. I love to drive. So it's like, I think we partner well because the things that we went through in the course of meeting each other helped us to identify what our strengths were and who would play well with our strengths and weaknesses. So, like, I don't know. I still say that's therapy. Being able to get down and get dirty and go, hey, I think you're cute. I think you're good in bed. I think all of that is wonderful, but none of that is going to help me with the fact that you don't know how to control your temper, or the fact that you leave shit everywhere. And that really messes with me. And when we talk about it, we can't reach an area of compromise. Like, I think knowing the things that don't work for you, and being able to say, this is the thing that doesn't work for me that I can't compromise on, is critical to being in relationships.
Mm-hmm. I love that example of driving, because it sounds like for her and her hyperactivity, long drives, they get to a point where there's just a stretch of road and it's so boring and it's so I can't even think of the word that she's like, oh no, I can't do this.
Like she's just, it's not her thing. Like she'll do mm-hmm. it if I ask her to, certainly. But I'm just like, I don't mind doing it. Why should she do it?
And how that speaks into how ADHD can present for some other people, because you could be someone with ADHD and attentive and you can't do long drives because you'll miss your exit, you know? Mm-hmm. So how that shows up differently for everyone. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, like, you know what we were talking, like driving, I'm glad that came up. We were talking about how symptoms can be a spectrum, and if PTSD symptoms could exacerbate symptoms, they can. But you know what is more likely to, even than the PTSD, just general stress. Mm. Like I just said, I love to drive. I have no problem with driving. I have an excellent sense of direction. If you want to see me miss every turn that the GPS suggests, stress me out too much. I've made the wrong turn, gone back and corrected it, and made the wrong turn again. Mm-hmm. Like your stress levels are so important, and it gets so much worse. And some people don't, like, that doesn't happen to everyone, but it happens to a lot of us. And some of us don't know that about ourselves. So we're in a stressful situation and we're going, I want to help. Let me do these things. But maybe we're picking things that require things that we're not good at, even when things are all
or less stressful.
Less stressful. Thank you. Yes. So maybe you're not great at being on time, but you do all right when you're not stressed out. But when you're mm-hmm. stressed out, your symptoms may exacerbate and you're running into a severe time with a severe issue with timeliness then. And now you're looking like you committed to things that you knew you weren't going to be able to deliver on, which creates mm-hmm. additional conflict for you. So it's like, we have to be able to know ourselves. And a lot of us are diagnosed late and we're still on that journey of discovery. One, mm-hmm. and then most of us are on that journey of discovery and we're the guide, but we don't know where we're going because mm-hmm. literature is not there, because the mm-hmm. research isn't there. So we've got partners and friends and colleagues who are looking at us poised to give us what we need. And we don't always know because of the lack of access to treatment that we do have, or lack of resources to go and take advantage of the ones that we do have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's a very difficult problem, like for everybody involved. And I think a lot of love and a lot of patience has to be exercised by everyone. And I think there's a lot of, like, we've talked a lot about the challenges. I want to be honest about the fact that I think there's a lot of reward in dating someone with ADHD. Mm-hmm. A person who is hyper-focused will learn every single detail of your life and do some of the most wonderful things to surprise you when you didn't think they were even listening to you. You know, they'll do that. Like, I think a lot of us know that, hey, this can be a little bit challenging to deal with. So you might get more allowance from us as, in terms of grace, because we're trying mm-hmm. to show ourselves gracious to receive grace. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that too, like the amount of additional conflict that you experience in a relationship like this. Maybe it makes you a little more experienced with being able to navigate conflict. Like, yeah. I think there are a lot of things that are also positive about being mm-hmm. in a relationship with a person with ADHD. So, like, I don't mm-hmm. want to leave anyone who's listening with the impression of, like, oh, this is going to be an uphill battle. No, it's not. There's a, like, the person you choose is supposed to be somebody you like, so they have redeeming qualities mm-hmm. that helps that with their bullshit. Yeah. And we all got our shit with us. So, like, you know, everybody can just come in and be on their humble, because we've all got our stuff and we can collaborate and things will go beautifully.
For sure. Yeah, I'm glad that you said that, because I know I started with, like, me and my boyfriend are, like, kind of at heads due to, like, navigating it. But no, it's a good being at heads. Like, it's a learning about him as a partner and also learning about myself and why I'm reacting to things the way that I'm reacting to. So it's been, like, a really good introspective journey.
Yo, my therapist said to me, and it wasn't about the relationship. I've been with my therapist since 2019. I love her. find a Black therapist, but don't let it be like, if you can't find one yet, like, just go see somebody else until you can, yeah. please. Uh-huh. But like, she said to me that relationships trigger things in us so that we can learn how to work through them. And so, because she was kind enough to share that with me, I've learned to go when something is causing me to feel like I need to react, like I need to withdraw, like I need to lash out, my first thought now, depending if I'm able to access my higher self at that point, like, you know, like, let's be honest, but in the best version of this, I'm able to go, all right, like, yeah, you don't like that, but do you not like that because of something they did or because of something that you think it says about you? Like, what was actually said versus how you feel it was said? Like, what's the real, like, before we go taking this to our partner and creating conflict and angst, like, let's really sort through the whys and wherefores here and see, is this them or is this you? Because it could be you. Sometimes it's you.
Sometimes it's you. Yeah. Sometimes you got to look in the mirror and say, boy.
Like, and that, that right there, like, self-awareness, I think, can help a lot with this too. Like, I have a disorder that makes me late and forgetful. If you tell me I forgot to show up on time, chances are you're right. Like, maybe we don't have to argue about that. Like, you told me to show up at that time. Like, my bad. Mm-hmm. How can I resolve? Can I make it up to you? Is there something I can do to make it up to you besides be better at being on time in the future, which of course I'll be doing, you know, like, let's make amends here. But I don't know. I just like, it's just as simple and just as difficult as learning to be patient and hear our partners and listen with an open heart and listen to understand and go into it with the assumption that someone is not trying to take advantage of us, which, coming off of dating apps and coming off of all this fuckery that we subjected to out here, like, I understand that what I'm saying is a tall ask.
Right.
But if you can swing big on it, I feel like the rewards can be big, because I'm learning, being in a healthy relationship, that there's some shit I've never had to deal with. Because I was in relationships that, I'm so sick of the word toxic, but were so, like, the dynamic was so volatile that I didn't get to examine as much of the role that I played in it as I should. So
I feel that.
I'm learning things about myself. It's like, who are you in a relationship when you're not being abused? What negative coping mechanisms have you developed as a result of the things that have happened to you that you bring into relationships that maybe help to keep conflict going rather than resolve it? Like, let's work our way through that too. So, like, the work is never just on our partners, it's on ourselves too.
For sure. For sure. Really good point. I'm going to starkly shift gears and say, let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Always.
This podcast is about sex, love, and dating.
Yes.
So I want to read a tweet from you from 2020. Pulling back a little bit. So if it's not how you feel anymore, feel free to be like, I don't believe
I might
that.
But still, you never know. Look, if I said it, I'm going to stand. Look, I'll be like
there
the toxic girlfriend.
Ten toes.
That's my girl. I'm going to stand behind her.
There you go. Okay, so you said sex. We don't talk about ADHD and sex enough. There's times that we are inventive and creative and things sizzle, and there's times when we are overwhelmed and exhausted and things fizzle. I love the rhymes. Could you explain a little bit about what that looks like?
I think when your mind is going a million miles an hour and you can't quiet it, sometimes the best thing to do is just not try to have sex that night. Like, I think as a partner, I try to be attentive to, like, knowing, and I think we all as partners need to know when our partner is not there with us. And if they're not there with us, maybe that's time. And by maybe, I mean definitely, it's time to pause and say, hey, you still want to be here with me in this space? Or do we need to shift into some other kind of thing and see what's going on? Like, if you want to, like, we both got ADHD. If you wander off, do you want to come back or do we need to go where you wandered over to? Because sometimes your mind will wander someplace and you might not be able to bring it back because it went someplace to something else you need to address. And not taking that personally has to be a thing because, and I think this is an area where I don't think that a person with ADHD has to date someone with ADHD in order to be understood. It's not necessary. All that's necessary is someone who's willing to listen and respect and understand. But I think the reason why my relationship individually works is because we don't have to spend a lot of time explaining that kind of thing to each other. It's just like, if I'm not here, it doesn't have a single thing to do with who you are as a partner or a lover or anything. It's just that my brain just decided that this is where we're going. And it doesn't happen very often. But when it does, you know, like we usually just change gears. I think we're both like, but I want to say that I don't think that that's the norm. I think that that causes more conflict. And I have had partners who've been insulted by that. I feel I'm in a safe space. So I want to point out those partners were men. And I feel like sometimes that's a thing for men specifically to feel like that reflects on their capabilities as a lover. And it does not. So another area where communication and compromise is very necessary. Like some people are hypersexual in their desires. So like there could be a difference in appetites to look at. And this is a really big hot spot for RSD. Where do people feel most vulnerable? In the bedroom, right? So like the conversations around that I don't think are any different than it would be for a couple without ADHD. Like you need to have discussions about what is happening in the bedroom when you're not in the bedroom, because when you're in the bedroom, it's such a vulnerable place that sometimes you can wound accidentally. So like, if that's something you're experiencing, like definitely like, hey, what was going on last night? Like, it seemed like maybe you weren't enjoying yourself as much as I would like you to. Can I help? Like, you know, there, there are ways to phrase it where your partner hears it as, I want this to be a mutually enjoyable experience and not, hey, you weren't paying attention and that made me feel like shit and you're fucked up and now you're hurting me with your fucked upness.
We're talking about sex. You mentioned taking medications for your ADHD. And one thing known about psychotropics is that sometimes it messes with your libido. Can you talk to that? You know,
I do not have that problem. Not with the ADHD meds. Not with the ADHD meds. However, have it like, let me say, I don't have that problem with the ADHD meds. The antidepressants that I take, however.
Baby, let's talk about that. Just a quick tangent because.
Not gonna lie, I think that can. I was on an antidepressant and could not orgasm. And my then spouse was like, you don't wanna have sex? And I'm like, would you wanna have sex if you couldn't orgasm? Like, it was like, it wasn't even like it was, I didn't feel anything. Imagine, like, you're just, you're having sex and you're like,
you're close. Very close, but it won't come to fruition. Yes.
It is, it's more frustrating than if you never had sex at all, because now you're in your head and the only thing you can think of is like, what do I need? A jackhammer? Like, what? Like, what am I supposed to do here? Like, what's he supposed to do? You can't do nothing for me. Like, and it's not your fault. It's this medicine. We're just broke here right now.
And another thing I've experienced with antidepressants is that I would be in, I'll be in the mood mentally, but not physically. And then it's like, I could have sex, but the work it would be to get myself turned on, I'm gonna sit down. I'm just gonna sit down.
And the partner that I had at the time was very much the kind of person for whom sexual rejection, to me, I'm not in the mood right now, is not a rejection of you, but that was not the way it was received. It was very much considered a personal rejection, and it led to a lot of yelling and terrible things. So find somebody with a similar sex drive. Like, it doesn't have to be exactly the same. Like, I don't know. I don't think you have to be with someone who's just like you, but I feel like you need to know which areas are like the bare minimum for you to have your needs met and govern yourself accordingly. I think we get into trouble when we're like, if I squint out of one eye and don't look out of the other, you are a phenomenal partner. And then we're like trying to nudge them closer to our ideal. Like, if you would just do that, you'd be perfect. That's a disservice we're doing to them and ourselves. We deserve to be with partners who we like as is.
Right. For sure. For sure. Renee, this has been an amazing conversation with you. Same. Thank you so much for being here. This is really fun. Is there anything else about kind of what we've been talking about that you would like to add? And if not, tell us about, you know, your work, where we can find you, your blog, your podcast, and all that good stuff.
So the key to a good relationship is liking each other and being willing to hash it out until you can reach a resolution, whether it's ADHD or not. So just keep it like, just keep working towards the resolution. Either you'll hit the resolution or you'll realize that no resolution can be reached, at which point you can decide whether you want to continue the relationship or not. And either one of those is okay, because it's about getting your needs met, right? Everyone's trying to get their own needs met. And as far as where to find me, you can search Black Girl Lost Keys on any social media and you'll be able to find us there. Go to blackgirllostkeys.com and you'll find the blog, the store, the podcast. There's some ebooks in there that have some wonderful information about how to clean your house, how to get better at saying no and not overcommitting to things. We did a fashion book. Because, you know, like, compiling a decent wardrobe requires, it's like, you don't have to be like an executive function master, but you gotta like do the work of knowing how to put something together that says you. And we talked a little bit about that in that book. So there's a lot of cool stuff there. Like, I have ADHD, so I gotta keep trying new things, and that usually means something new for that site some kind of way.
Makes total sense. I love it. I love it. Yes, definitely go check out Renee on the web. She's amazing.
Y'all are amazing. Thank you so much for your time, for being willing to be flexible. I'm honored to be on here with y'all. Really, thank you.
Thank you so much.